Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the Charm City Reboot sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
Reboot.
Didn't have much for this, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I you know, the O's you could have gone.
I was going to make a Natty Bo and Pickles Pub joke for folks who know Baltimore, but I figured that was a little bit too obscure.
Yeah, I'm trying, you know, Adley Rushman could have gotten in there, or the new boss for Adley. I don't know.
Either way.
Have I ever told my first time to Camden Yards story on the podcast?
You have with Utah Street.
Yeah. I don't remember the things I tell you in the office versus what I've said on the air. But yeah, somebody needs to create EUTAW. Come on, got me walking around the place looking for UTAH, for God's sakes. I didn't like it. I did not like it. Anyway, looks like the. And by the way. And let's say sort of the Baltimore DC corridor, if you will. You know, like the level of vitriol when the Washington Commanders were sold. You know, Dan Snyder, and it was like, oh, happy to. I gotta say, as a non-Orioles fan, I pay attention obviously to. There's a level of vitriol for the Angelos family that I gotta tell you honestly, I didn't know existed or didn't think existed. And, you know, I know the team hasn't been, but if you are an Orioles fan today, are you very happy with the state of your franchise is my question. You got a long-term lease, right? You're staying in Camden Yards. You've got the best farm system in baseball. You've got young stars on your team. And I mentioned one of them, Adley Rushman. You got to be, you won the division. Like, things are good. So I understand, like, before that, things weren't so good. But right now, the state of the Orioles as a baseball team is very good.
Yeah, so I mean, we should just mention the news here real quick.
Yeah, people know the news, whatever. They were sold. Great, they were sold.
The Baltimore Orioles have reached an agreement, the Angelos family reached an agreement to sell the Baltimore Orioles, a $1.725 billion deal to a group led by Carlyle founder David Rubenstein. The group also includes some big names like Cal Ripken Jr. as one of them.
By the way, when he broke the record, the consecutive game streak.
There you go.
And by the way, I can give you the date. I don't remember the year, but I can give you. You know why?
It was the day that somebody was with Jackson's birthday.
No, Soschnick, my birthday.
Your birthday, okay,
September 6th of some date. I don't know what it was.
There you go. The deal values the team at $1.725 billion. As I said,
what does Bodenhausen value the team?
We had them at 1.6, I believe.
All right.
Interesting kind of nugget wrinkle in the deal. The group is buying almost 40% of the team at the start, and then after Peter Angelos, who was 94 years old, the patriarch of the Angelos family, after he passes, they are going to buy the other 60%. There are some tax implications there that you and I
was
going to
say the tax division of the law firm was absolutely consulted on the sale of this franchise.
But I think your question is a good place to start, Scott, because unlike other sports where there's a hard salary cap or even soft salary cap, new owners in baseball can fundamentally change the entire way that your team thinks about spending, thinks about roster construction, thinks about competing for World Series titles. And if you are coming in to spend, having a base like the Orioles have with Adley Rushman and Jackson Holliday and a number of other really, really talented young stars, yes, I think if you're an Orioles fan, the idea of the Angelos steering this team through the next few years and probably losing one or two or more of that young core versus potentially having an ownership group that is going to lock that core in long term and decide to spend can be night and day, right? It can be a fundamental difference in the future of your franchise. So, yes, I think Orioles fans have for a long time have been frustrated with the Angelos family. This is a good time to take over this team if, and that's a big if perhaps, but if you are willing to start spending even close to the way that Steve Cohen started spending when he bought the Mets.
How'd that work out for Steve Cohen? Where was the World Series parade in New York?
Small sample size so far. How will it work out for the Mets? It's going to be great for the Mets, right?
This is
spending works, right? There are outliers.
Say, by the way, it doesn't Rubenstein's work every a local year, guy. He's a Baltimore
works.
Guy.
Rubenstein's a local guy, and a billionaire. He's a wealthy man. It seems like his group is also full of other wealthy people. Yeah, this is going to be fascinating to watch because, yeah, this is not like Josh Harris buying the Commanders, where who knows if the Commanders are going to be any good in the next few years. This group can determine with its checkbook how much the Orioles are going to compete long-term in Major League Baseball. And that's a fundamentally baseball thing when we think about the major U.S. sports.
And here's something people may not know about David Rubenstein, that he hosts a show on Bloomberg Television. You know, yep. It was started when we were there. And nobody would, I don't think, look or listen to David Rubenstein and say, you know what he should do? He should host a TV show. Like, I just, not something. And I got to say, it sort of has this loyal group following. He's become a little cult figure in that role. And it's sort of, there aren't that many people who can do the peer-to-peer conversations when you're talking to the billionaires that don't, you know, and David is one of them. And it's really good. Like, I find it entertaining. I pop it on. So if you haven't seen the show, I would say go to the Google, go to the YouTube, and throw it in there and take a good look and listen to what David Rubenstein has to say with his guests. And one more, can I do a piece of housekeeping that in no way, shape, or form do we have to do, but I want to do it because I am out there railing all the time. People are ripping us off all the time at Sportico. They rip us off all the time. And, you know, I'm out there preaching and ripping people and like, this is ridiculous. So in our speed, our rush for speed and everything yesterday, I guess it dropped on our social feed to credit John Arand, starting at Puck, that, you know, he was first with the news that the team had reached agreement with Rubenstein. I was emailing with him like, oops, sorry, we should, you know, and yeah, he deserves it. And, you know, good story. He's a Baltimore guy. He's a big Baltimore Orioles fan. That's a great first story for him. And I'll even tell you, sign up for his newsletter. Go ahead. Go check out Horan's newsletter. I mean, that's how we operate here. You and I and Sportico, we value smart, good work. And we say it all the time. If you have a good story, we will tell the world about it. You should. We want people to. We just want good, smart work. So, sorry, John. That was an accident. We rectified it pretty darn quickly.
And my story, quick credited Puck and John.
Yeah, your story. It was just our social. And he was, you know, he pointed it out. And he never does. He doesn't care about that stuff. But, you know, it's just for, I would say this is just for the industry at large. You know, because I am out there all the time hammering people about stealing stuff. It's ridiculous. Like, it is absolutely ridiculous. The number of people who do zero work, zero work. I mean, you had a story with Daniel Libet based on your Freedom of Information Act request about Florida State and the private equity. Maybe we'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
I mean, that's a lot of work. Dogged reporting. You got to go through it. You do all the work, and then other people just rip it off. And maybe they'll link. Maybe they'll credit. Maybe they'll hide the link. And they'll just say, "Oh, this is what was happening." I mean, here's the code word. They had a code name for it, and don't even say that you guys did the work. I absolutely hate that about our industry, and I call it out all the time. So when we goof, and we goofed on this one. We make it right, and two, I'll tell people we goof, it happens, and three, you give credit where it's due, where good work is done. So, attaboy, John Arand, good luck at Puck. I'm off the soapbox.
What a dream for him, by the way. As you said, a huge Orioles fan, for his first story in a new job to be the scoop of a new owner coming at, as we said, this critical time for the team. Great for him. One other thing that I think we should discuss here, this sale potentially has a really big effect on the other local baseball.
You're going
team.
South on 95, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going south on 95. The Washington Nationals hired a bank, went through a exploratory sale process 2 years ago now. One of the things I kept hearing about that process, which ultimately ended without a transaction happening, was that the relationship between the Nationals and the Orioles on the media side, the Orioles essentially own the Nationals TV, rights.
The whole thing was a messin'.
Was
did
a mess.
You actually hit? Did you actually hit your head on the microphone?
Terrible. That was awful. The whole thing was a mess, and it, my understanding on this deal, and who knows, but if this new ownership group of the Orioles is willing to take a fresher approach to the Nationals, maybe figure out some deal that can get the Nationals out of that deal, free them up so that they have their own media rights, if that were to happen, that could have dramatic effects on the Lerner family, which currently owns the Nationals, and the possibility of a sale. And I think you and I probably have a good idea of what buyer might be first in line if that was to open up
only
again.
Only there was a sports mogul in the nation's capital who, by the way, has an interest in media, might have recently acquired and rebranded a network, maybe own a couple of teams and maybe relocating or looking at relocating a couple of those teams to Northern Virginia. And man, is there anybody like that at all? I'm struggling. Oh, and who has, by the way, at the Sportico Invest in Sports Conference may have told the world that, yes, I'm looking to expand my empire, but I will only do it in market.
That's a very specific set of restrictions there, Scott.
Who has pretty nice suits and wears fancy sneakers, immaculately trimmed goatee. Is there anybody?
Kind of sounds like Ted Leonsis.
Leonsis. And he, of course, and the Learners are very close. And yeah, you and I are expecting a transaction. Let's go. Let's make those calls.
Yeah, yeah. So again, I think this is a sale of one team, and maybe portends the potential transaction of a second baseball team as well. And that would make Major League Baseball obviously very, very happy. I know that this weird relationship with the Orioles and the Nationals, which stems back to when the Nationals, when they moved to DC, technically quote unquote infringing on the Orioles' local rights or whatever the 90 or 100 mile radius that baseball teams have to protect their own commercial rights. Baseball would be thrilled to get that to get that over with. So not just Orioles fans potentially excited here, but there may be some folks in and around the Nationals that are excited about a new group to sit across the table from as they try to figure out how to unwind or make less of a mess of their current media situation.
Now, Ted may be salivating at the chance to get that baseball team, but I got to tell you, I always, every time someone mentions the Orioles, I do have a Pavlovian response of, like, I think about Boog's Barbecue. And I mean, I really, it's just got my head. That's where my head goes, right? It doesn't go to the baseball. It goes to Boob's Barbecue. And I'm like, you ever see them like slapping on the sauce with the mops? Imagine a mop bucket filled with barbecue sauce. Then you dip the mop in, and then you put on the sauce with the mop across the huge grill. Oh, that's what I'm thinking about right now.
Got my stomach rumbling here, Scott.
Yeah, well, that's where. All right. Speaking of rumblings, oh, nice. PGA Tour.
Huh? PGA Tour.
PGA Tour has finally reached an agreement. Half an agreement. Well, one full agreement, only half of the way done, right?
Yeah.
So it is a full agreement. You know, the Fenway-led group, about $3 billion invested in PGA Tour's new commercial entity, a laundry list of professional sports team owners involved. But I think you and I realize this is only part of the battle. Can the PGA Tour reach some sort of agreement? We heard the announcement a while back of a merger with LIV, but from what I'm hearing, not going easily. This surely gives them a little bit of leverage. You know, you're more or better capitalized, but $3 billion versus what the Saudi wealth fund can do, and we see the kind of salaries that they are throwing around. Where do we stand, you think, in terms of what this does in terms of helping or hurting a completion of a deal with LIV?
Oh, I think it helps. So we have been, and we were right about this, we've said on the podcast for a while, this deal was going to happen first.
Yes.
In the broad scheme of the PGA Tour revolutionizing its business, it was going to get this deal done with this group called the Strategic Sports Group, full of
SSG
owners like Steve Cohen, like Fenway, Wick Grosbeck, Mark Lazary, Jerry Cardinale. There's a laundry list of very important people in sports that are part of this group. This was going to happen first. And now the question is, can you get the final LIV deal done? I've heard optimism from folks in and around this deal recently, Scott. There was a little bit of pessimism, I felt like, a couple months ago when we were getting up into that December 31st deadline about whether this was going to happen. Now it seems like maybe the winds have shifted a bit, and it does seem like it's going to happen. But the basic structure here, PGA Tour creating a new co, PGA Tour Enterprises, much like we've seen private equity deals in sports in other ways, and we can talk about Florida State in a second because it's a similar structure.
Yep.
Create the commercial enterprise, have a sell equity into it. Players are going to share in a bunch of this. They reported that it was up to $3 billion today from this new group. You and I reported on Friday that the initial investment was going to be a little bit below that. There's so much economics here that I think are in a holding pattern of sorts, until they figure out, one, does the LIV deal happen? And if it does, what is the equity structure of this new capitalized PGA Tour Enterprises? What does that look like? Who has what? Those are all big questions. So I think anyone who tells you that they know the financials here, valuations, total money given right now, is maybe not being totally honest, because I don't think any of those decisions have fully been made until anyone has a sense of what they're investing in and how global the property is.
All right, back of napkin math, though, when you hear about, oh, the players get up to like $1.5 billion in equity or blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm still, if I'm a top golfer and LIV guarantees me $600-700 million, if no agreement is reached, I don't know, dude, seems like a somewhat easy decision for those who are questioning where should I play.
This is the big challenge, right? This is the big challenge if the PGA Tour doesn't get this done, is that they are, as you said, regardless of how much money you raise from some of the richest owners in America, you are not going to compete financially on par with LIV.
How do you think these investors would react to monthly capital calls? We need more.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry. I know you got this email from us last month, but we need a little bit more.
Yeah, the price of oil just went up, so we need a second capital
call. Golfer X number,
yeah,
whatever in the world, needs this X, and we need to, you know, we just need one more capital call for this
that,
month anyway.
That said, I do think that there is value in doing better on the pay scale, right? If the old pay model did not keep players, there's a chance that the old pay model times 1.5 maybe does, right? So I think anything that they can do to increase pay right now is helpful. But they just lost another player to LIV, I believe, Tyrell Hatton, either late last week or early this week. There's talk of a few others, names that I didn't know, making the jump as well. John Rahm obviously was a huge, huge name that moved over to LIV in December. It's not as though the tour has staunched the defection in any capacity over the past few months, at least. So really interesting to see how this plays out and what the end result is. But I think if I was one of these investors, I think I would prefer to be invested in the global thing with LIV alongside than I would be to go back to a world where I've capitalized a group that is in constant competition with a group that has a lot more money than we do. That seems like it's a worse scenario. So who knows? We'll see what happens. But it does sound like it's more likely than not now that this LIV deal does in fact happen.
All right. Now, a small nugget that may seem insignificant, but I think it's worth noting. And we say it's a Fenway Sports-led group.
Yeah.
I believe the release said, you know, Fenway will offer strategic advice, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. That Fenway sure will assuredly collect some fees as part of this. So it isn't just sort of an straight-up investment. There's also, we're getting paid as part of this. So, you know, if I'm on one side of it, I'd like to be collecting fees as part of the deal. You know, if we're talking about dual revenue streams that we talk about in TV of cable or sub fees and advertising, I'd like to have it where there's the initial investment as well as fees coming in. So at least Fenway, I think in that regard, has a little bit of a leg up on the other people coming in the deal.
Yeah, and not sharing in the economics like Fenway, but Steve Cohen, I believe, is putting in an equal share to Fenway, or if not equal, something very, very close to equal. So Steve is a huge part of this transaction as well. One other shout out we should give, Scott, the folks at Hogan Lovells, the law firm, did both of these deals, the Orioles deal that we started at the top and the Strategic Sports Group investment alongside the PGA Tour. So two big deals in our sports, probably the two biggest things we're going to talk about this week, and both of those done in some capacity by Hogan Lovells. So shout out to them as well. They've done a lot. They had a week last year when they did both Leo Messi's contract and I think the Commanders deal. That was a big one too in the same week, and another big week over there as well this week.
If I was a listener of the show, I would be like, my Lord, how much is that firm paying Sportico? Okay.
I can answer that.
Yeah, answer because I know people are going to ask. So please do say how much they're paying.
That was not an ad read. That was not an ad read.
That was not. You just it's a note. You thought it was an interesting note.
I think it's interesting. Yeah.
And all right, let's do this if we can. Now, we didn't discuss this. I'm going to put you on the spot, but we talked about making this a regular part of the show. Like, it's time to triangulate.
Yeah. Right? We need a little triangulation music from Aaron here. Yeah.
Yeah. Insert whatever you want. Yeah. Whatever you think triangle works. But these investors, I mean, Fenway, I think Jerry Cardinal, I think LeBron James, I think soccer teams, obviously NBA. I'm thinking Las Vegas. We want to be part of that. Now you talk, you know, perhaps a tie up. Are you looking long term tie up with Saudi investment fund, global expansion to the Middle East in sport. We see how that's going.
This is my triangulation, Scott.
This is my kind of open air triangulation of where this is going and how it all fits together.
My connection was going to be that that four of the people in this strategic sports group, Arthur Blank, Steve Cohen, Mark Lazary, and Fenway, are also investors in TGL. The new sports league or the golf league that's hopefully going to launch early next year, backed by Tiger and Rory McIlroy. So these are investors who are already and Arthur Blank especially, because he's an investor or owner of the PGA Superstore. These are a lot of these investors are already invested in golf in some capacity, and are looking to round out their golf portfolios with the PGA Tour commercial rights in addition to other teams that they already own. PGA is a partner to complete the triangle, is a partner in TGL as well. So there is there's a lot of kind of back and forth just within the golf world in this deal specifically.
All right, now let's talk about a little teeny weeny sporting event, the Super Bowl. Now that we've got these big things going, I don't remember what we discussed last time, and what we didn't is in terms of the Super Bowl. And I should check with our people here. We haven't announced it yet, but while we're on the air, I'm going to let you speak right now, Evan, because I'm going to check with our folks if I can do it on the show that's going to air tomorrow, because it better be public by then. If not, I'm not going to be happy. So you take it away, and I'm going to signal to our people, see if I can say something. Go ahead.
Wow, what a mess. To continue a conversation that Scott and I had on Monday, news that we broke at Sportico this week, Kristen Juszczyk, who is the wife of 49ers fullback Kyle Juszczyk, people may know her. She was making the jackets. Taylor Swift wore one. Klay Thompson wore one. Christian McCaffrey's girlfriend wore one. She was making a number of jackets that went absolutely viral in the past few weeks because of Taylor Swift, because she wore one and everyone wanted to know where it came from. Kristen Juszczyk, the designer, reached a deal with the NFL to get her hands on NFL licensing rights. I believe she's in talks with the NFLPA on the same thing. But she will hopefully soon at least have the ability legally to make these jackets for a commercial purpose and sell them wide. Scott, this is a story that you've been championing here within our walls at Sportico. It's absolutely fascinating.
Could you please put a qualifier in front of championing? Rightly championing, adeptly championing, because everybody in the world keeps reading every. And by the way, you know as well as I do, I'm going to chime in here, there's garbage, there's absolute garbage Taylor Swift coverage, right?
95%
of it. There is garbage Taylor Swift coverage, and then there is smart Taylor Swift coverage. And us breaking the story that this woman had obtained a license from the NFL to now that's smart Taylor Swift coverage. You know, it's Taylor Swift adjacent. That's a real sports business story, utilizing the popularity of the event of a global superstar. I would love to find out the financial terms. Or does the NFL say, just go ahead? You know what? We're so happy to reach a new audience. I keep seeing more and more videos on Twitter of mothers and daughters, fathers and daughters, like little girls watching football, going, hey, there's Taylor, or, you know, the rooting for Travis. This is a whole new demographic that in some way has been open to the NFL, and I'm dying to see if they can drive a Brinks truck right through the opening that they've got.
It's such a fascinating business story because it is kind of a combination of so many different things, including the NFL, the power of the Super Bowl, the power of celebrity, the power of Taylor Swift's celebrity specifically, and a really good business lesson, I think, in the way in which she went about this, right? From what I remember reading, Taylor Swift didn't ask her for one of these. She made it, and she sent it to someone that gave it to Taylor. Well, Taylor
she had made
was
a jacket
like, oh,
for Brittany Mahomes.
For Brittany Mahomes, yeah.
And then so she sent it to Brittany, said, I made one for Taylor. You know, and yes, exactly. No order was placed, but hey, here you go on a lark, and Taylor wore it.
Shoot your shot. I know we talked about this last week, or earlier this week, but the big question now, how much does she want to put into this? Like, does she want to hire a huge team of seamstresses to pump these things out? There's going to be demand, obviously, but she's only one person, and from what I understand, she was hand making them. Like, what is the infrastructure look like, and how much does she want to put into trying to make this a big commercial?
Like we said, I don't think she needs to go scale right now. What Kristen Juszczyk needs are the four or five right people, and I'm not saying I know who they are, Taylor's one of them, to wear one of these jackets at the Super Bowl. That's what she needs. The right people to be sporting her designs at the Super Bowl. Let that demand build to a fever pitch. Let there be a crescendo, a post-Super Bowl crescendo. And then you talk about, okay, where am I doing my manufacturing? What store is it? Is this going to be a Neiman Marcus? Is this going to be Fanatics? Is this going to be, NFL shop? I don't know.
That's all assuming she wants that, right?
Oh, she wants that.
I'm not sure if we even, I'm not sure if we even know that.
She wants that.
We'll see.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm saying, by the way, I'm curious to, I don't know. I'm curious. I know her husband has been very supportive of her endeavor, saying, oh, she's worked so hard for a long time and she really, she goes at it. Worth noting that he has an economics degree from Harvard.
Yep.
So I'm just curious how much he's like, is he like the CFO of the company? Is he in the, yes, I play football, but my real job is going to be running this company now that has taken off. Just
shout
worth noting.
Shout out to those Ivy League football
Christian,
players,
if you're listening, please let us know. What did you say about Ivy League football?
I said shout out to those Ivy League football players.
Oh,
me and Kyle, we're part of a very elite group here.
Give me the quick. You had what? Keith Elias, right? He's Princeton, wasn't he?
Keith Elias, Ross Tucker.
Who's one of the Giants?
Jesper Horsted.
Sean something. There was a little guy, Sean something.
The coach of the lightweight team after I left.
Was it Maury or something like
Sean
that?
Sean Maury, yeah.
Oh, I got that.
There's tons. There's probably 10 in the Ivy in the NFL right now. Zach Diossi obviously was, I believe,
right. That was
Brown.
The Giant I was thinking of.
Yeah. There's a bunch. The Ivy League football scene is actually quite good. I was laughing that my Ivy League football experience was quite a bit different.
The lightweight Ivy League football. We keep
none of those
a
in the NFL.
As we
no lightweight football players in the NFL right
once
now.
Once again, Novi Williams won exactly zero games in his tenure at the Princeton lightweight football.
Let's move on real quick. We teased it a little bit. Florida State. We have been writing at Sportico for a few months about Florida State's exploration of potentially raising private equity money to fund its athletic department. I have not been quiet on Twitter or in our pages about my frustration with the university, which I think really slow played an open records request that we had filed back in August for public records related.
You mean the university that was lamenting the lack of transparency in its search for truth?
The very same one. We got some of those documents back this week, largely redacted, heavily redacted, but there was enough in the unredacted parts to get at least some little nuggets about the way in which this all went out. Some interesting things that we found: the relationship between Florida State and JP Morgan, which is working with Florida State to explore this fundraising, that dates back to the summer of 2022. Scott, so it's been more than a year and a half since those talks were formally underway. Florida State talked with Sixth Street, which we had reported before, and also Arctos Partners throughout most of early 2023, to the point that they were comparing the bid offers from both of the private equity funds. This is what Arctos is willing to do. This is what Sixth Street is going to do. Here's why we like one versus the other. There's a bunch in there, and again, we only got documents up until August, and there's a lot that has happened at Florida State in the 8 months since August. But it did give at least a very early stage of how they were thinking about structuring things through a NewCo, who was at the table, including these two private equity giants, one of them Arctos being Sports Specific and Sixth Street being a way bigger group and spread across a lot of other things. And it'll be fascinating to see if this does happen, Scott. In the meantime, the Florida State suing its way out of the ACC. We're going to see where that goes. They want to be in a new conference. They have talked very publicly about the money disadvantage they are going to be at in the ACC. They also went undefeated as a football team this year, Scott.
Give me some of the projections that you guys got, because some of those were eye-popping numbers.
Yeah, one of the things that we got our hands on was the data room for the partially redacted, but the data room for the private equity talks, and that is a full spreadsheet going 16, maybe even more, almost 20 years into the future, projections from Florida State for revenue. One of the most interesting ones there is the conference revenue line, and I'm assuming because this was made back in June that it includes projections for the ACC and not for the Florida State's more recent specific aims to get out of the ACC. But the conference distribution money is huge. It's around $40 million right now. They had that jumping up to almost 80 in just a few years largely driven by the college football playoff, the expansion there, and new TV deals. Everybody expects all of the conferences to be getting a much larger check from the college football playoff moving forward. But those numbers continued just elevated year over year. Big jumps. Again, it's roughly $40 million right now. They had it at $180 million by 2042. So in 20 years, they have that more than, essentially, let's just call it 5X, a little bit less than 5X, that money coming in. So the first look I have seen from any big-time college sports university trying to tease out what the economics look like in 10 years, let alone 20 years, but trying to tease out what these revenue streams are going to look like. It's a fascinating look at the uncertainty in college sports, but also just how much money the people who are at the top of college sports expect to be flowing in, how much more money expect to be flowing in at a time when I would expect, Scott, that players are going to be getting paid, at least on the football and basketball teams. We're going to have more conference realignment. The media is all up in the air. Even with all those things, this is the revenue they're projecting. I found really fascinating.
Absolutely. I found fascinating. You know me, I love a good code name. Like, yeah. I just love the fact that it was called Project Osceola, you know, after the tribe. And, of course, the mascot, you know, Chief Osceola puts the spear in the middle of the field. I just love it. Oh, I got to keep everybody away. We can't even talk about it. We will only reference this as Project Osceola.
Love a good code name.
And let me finish, at least put the exclamation point on this one with the closing two graphs of the story, if I may. I don't often read, but I got to read these two paragraphs. And who was Collins? I don't remember. I have to go up top. You tell me when
he
I get
to. He is the chairman of the Florida State Board.
Chairman of the Florida State Board is Collins. Okay, so here we go. Sixth Street's other sports investments include a series of summer exhibitions played in the U.S. between some of the world's most valuable soccer teams. In July, a Sixth Street managing director invited a group of FSU officials, including Collins and President McCullough, to a matchup between Barcelona and Real Madrid at AT&T Stadium in Dallas. Here's the response. Not to be greedy, but would it be possible for us to bring a couple of our larger boosters with us as well? Collins replied. It would be a very nice trip for them to go there with the three of us. If it's not possible, that's fine. Just trying to get the most mileage out of this for the university. Period. The end.
So good, right? Like, so it good. Just so shows good. The way that they are, that and this is not a Florida State specific thing. I think a lot of colleges would have responded exactly the same way. But yeah, not only are we in talks about this thing, but if there is an opportunity to grant our boosters something else that's fun and cool that isn't on the normal schedule, we're going to jump at that opportunity. Interesting look at the dynamics there, for sure.
I don't think there has ever been a second half of a sentence that started with "not to be greedy" that I didn't want to know what was coming next. Not to be greedy, ellipse, but here comes piggish request. Yeah, I mean, so good. So good. And when I was checking with our people, we should at least, you know, I have to get back to that because otherwise I'm like, why did he, like, what was Scott talking about?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I was given the fingers crossed it'll be ready, but go ahead and say it anyway. So I assume this is going to happen. But we are doing our Super Bowl event as we do every year, a nice happy hour. We got extremely lucky in L.A. for the Super Bowl. When our partners, and we did this well in advance, our partners, the Rams, happened to qualify for the game. And like that just added a really significant and neat element to it. Well, I am proud to announce, Evan, for anybody who's going to be there, if they need to go to the Sportico happy hour on Friday before the Super Bowl, it'll be co-hosted. So it'll be Sportico, of course, joined by our good friends at the San Francisco 49ers.
Wow.
So, yes, yeah, very, very big. I mean, you have to find ways to stand out at the Super Bowl. I mean, there's so many things going on. This is going to be a standout event. So looking forward to hosting the sports business industry along with our friends at the Niners.
So we did the Rams when they were in the game. We're doing the Niners when they're in the game. If you're an NFL team executive out there,
what's the lesson?
You'd like to play in the Super Bowl next year.
Yeah, let's plan the party.
Partner
next year
with us in New Orleans right now. We're 2 for 2. Good luck. Open for those conversations. To start those, you can reach out to Scott on Twitter. You can find him at Soshnik. I am Evan Novi Williams. You can find me on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you very much to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman. Would like you to know that you can follow the Sportico at Sportacast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.